Welcome to the Beekeeper's Corner Podcast. Sunday, July 19th, 2015, episode number 80, Boom Shakalaka. From a basement in an undisclosed location in New Jersey and from the offices of Red Eye Productions, this is the Beekeeper's Corner Podcast with your host, Kevin England. Hello, hello, and thank you everyone for coming. It is my privilege to be here on this fine evening. Man, it was a hot one today. Walk outside and vaporize instantly, but seriously, folks. Okay, enough with a goofy intro, but one thing is true. Wow, it's hot today. 96 in the shade, and I, courtesy of the jeans passed along to me from my beloved mother, melt when it's warm outside and look as if someone threw me into the pool. You literally could just walk out to the yard and come back in and we'd be soaking wet today. I sit here behind the microphone this evening, totally worn out, but satisfied at a job well done. You see, we cleaned the garage today. Weeks and weeks ago, I did some work to build out boxes, and my table saw and other equipment had been sitting in the bay of my garage. And I've relayed in the last couple episodes how busy I've been, so it's just been something that's been festering out there. It's been nagging at me for 2 months now. I have a fundamental tenet in my life that my vehicle will be in the garage, and garages are for vehicles, not storage. I stored it in on a project a couple weekends ago to rearrange my garage over the last whatever periods of time I could find. Even in the evenings, I've been running out there and just trying to work on some sort of section. And I'm trying to make room for things and discard stuff that's no longer necessary. And after a concerted push, and with some help from my beloved, darling wife, I was able to get my truck into the well-organized and less cluttered garage. There's still a lot of work to do over on the workbench area, but the bays look better, and they look better than they have for a long time. It's very satisfying to pull a truck in the garage today. So what does this all have to do with beekeeping, one might ask? Well, the fact of the matter is I have a reasonable amount of equipment that I just built and stuff that's not in service. Some of it was just sitting out in the bee yard after the springtime when stuff didn't work out. And it's all nicely organized and stacked in a place in the garage. You know, heck, I even rolled out the solar wax melter today and got it out in the driveway and melted a large number of chunks of wax that I had collected. And I would say, yes, it was a really productive day and a day of satisfaction. Everybody, yes, feels good. So now I sit downstairs in my man cave, and no, I haven't been drinking any beverages or anything like that, but I'm sliding behind the microphone to record an episode for some of my favorite friends, you the beekeepers, and I'm excited as I have a few cool things to bring you today. First up is a special interview with New Jersey State Apiarist Tim Schuler. Let's just say that it's worlds away from anything that we've done in the past. We're going to talk some about a tongue-in-cheek contest on bee lining that maybe shouldn't be funny. Then we'll pass along a new finding on Nosema and larvae. We'll do a quick review of a recent summer meeting for the NWNJBA. We'll do some listener mail, a short bit on bee sting reactions, and we'll close out with some notions on vacation, and wow, we'll even bring you a little tune at the end that you're not going to want to miss. So much fun, so little time. Before I start, let's get our contact info out of the way. Want to chat, report something, say hello, yell at me? Just send an email to kevin@bkcorner.org. Well, wait, I'm not sure I want people yelling at me. How about constructive criticism if you really have to? Our show notes for this episode can be found at our website, www.bkcorner.org. You can go to our website and see the show notes for every episode we have. They're listed by number. And if you haven't ever taken a look, you're missing out, because you can go there and look. Every segment, every round table is separated and timed on our website. So if there was something you wanted to reference, something you wanted to revisit, you can go back and look it up on the episode and then figure out the time on the episode. Starts here, ends there. So go check that out. All right. Everybody in the deep end, Local Hive Report, let's go. Local Hive Report's going to be a smidge scattered here. Two hives on the property. But since we last talked to you, now there are three. Two hives on the farm and one nuke. There used to be three hives. Now there's two. Of the hives that are operational, all of them are doing well with the exception of the package hive, which I'll talk about in a moment. That thing is just literally an exercise in frustration. I have two hives on my property. They're Langstroth hives, and they're piled boxes high. One has a deep, a medium, a deep, three mediums. And this week, what I did was I put on a insulation box that has ventilation. What I see every week with these hives, and I also put an emery shim on the top so they'd have a top entrance and also give them a little more ventilation. The two hives that are on the pads on my property did really well this spring. And if I had the time this weekend, I would have pulled off the boxes and done a little honey harvesting. I guess I'm going to have to get to that next weekend. As I think about it, I've noticed that these hives have been congested, although they have tons of space to work with. And I think part of their problem is they're just hot. And it's been a little bit hot, as we said today, and hot over the last week or so. Both of these hives have issued a swarm. The big hive issued a swarm, and it's hanging in the tree. I'll put a pin in that, and I'll come back to that in a second. But I did look at this hive, and I put insulation box on it to try and help ventilate it. I was out there tonight, and there was a small number of bees hanging on the front, but not bearded across the whole front like I've seen in the past. The other hive has two deeps and three mediums on it, and it, too, I added an insulation box. So when I describe an insulation box, it's like a 3 to 4 inch insulation box. It has insulation and it's typically used dual purpose. It's the summer cover and the winter cover. It has holes all the way around it with wire mesh on the inside. And if need be, you put it on in the summertime. And as they're trying to evaporate a lot of honey and the moisture is flowing out of the top of the hive, it allows it to escape. In the wintertime, you could put these same insulation boxes on the top of your hive and tape all the holes off to plug them up. And the heat comes up, builds underneath the inner cover, but does not go out that insulation, and it's able to keep the hive functional. Now, the insulation underneath has a chamber with a mesh floor, and in there you put paper or some sort of substrate like cloth. I'm drawing a blank as to what they call me. It'll come in a second here. But the point of this is in the wintertime, it'll go up to the top, hit the insulation, and then collect in this material and absorb the moisture. That's the point of it. They call it a quilt. That's what they call it. So anyway, I put these on my boxes to help ventilate them. And I also, because the stack is so high, put an emery shim, which is just a 3/4 by 3/4 shim that goes all the way around on the top of the box, and it's got a little notch in top in the front, so that allows the bees to leave there, and it also allows some ventilation out of the top of the hive. So the other morning, Saturday morning, I went out there to try and collect the swarm that I saw up in the tree, and lo and behold, if the one hive, the shorter hive, didn't issue a mock swarm. So I watched it go out. I watched it collect on a tree. And then I realized later it came back down and went inside the hive. And I've been watching it ever since. And I do not believe that it swarmed. And that is the time frame when I went and put those insulation boxes on it and gave them a little more room. So when I looked at that box, it had two deeps and a medium on it. And it wasn't loaded up in the top, but it had a fair number of bees throughout. So I put two more mediums on it and that insulation box, and I think I have thwarted their swarm impulse. So let me tell the story of the swarm. It's somewhat amusing. The swarm issued on a tree, and it's about 40 feet in the air. I looked at it, and there was no means for me to get it down. I know I've mentioned in the past that Bob Kloss has a pole device that he used, and I've been meaning to build one, but time being what it is, haven't had a chance. So I sent a note over to Bob saying, hey, if you had a chance, let me know if I could borrow your swarm pole. We'll see if we can get this swarm out of the tree. So on Monday, Bob contacted me and said, hey, didn't get your message over the weekend, but I got it now. I'll come over tonight. Are they still there? And the answer was yes. So his pole extends 30 feet up in the air. But unfortunately, when it's extended all the way out and it has that jug on the end of it, it's got a big wobble to it. It slides all over the place. So you could picture the scene. It's fully extended and you can't reach it from the ground. So I got my 12-foot A-frame stepladder and I climbed up and stood over it and stood up and I'm holding the pole trying to jam it underneath the swarm, which is directly above me. And Bob is helping me out from the ground as support. When we tried to get it the first time, I poked it up and I actually hit right underneath the swarm and collected a number of bees, but some rained down on me. And I hit it and I hit it again and I tried to lower, and next thing you know, I was being accosted, and so was Bob. Sharon happened to be out in the yard talking to Daniel on the phone. And watched, and she said it looked like something out of the Keystone Cops. She's relaying step by step, blow by blow, Bob and I getting stung. And I guess what we realized after the fact, when we made our hasty retreat, and I got stung once on the eyebrow and once on the right arm, and I think Bob got a sting or two. But what happened is the bees rained down, and this is not uncommon if you do this. But typically, let's explain the behavior of a swarm. It comes out of a hive. It goes up and collects on a tree. It has no home, so it's not in a defensive mode. And eventually, it flies off to its home to be happy. Well, Bob hit it right on the head with his observation is when we looked at it, it appears that they had built comb. So that was their home, and they were going to defend it. So when they rained down on us, they were not very happy. And so we made our hasty retreat, and we put on some bee suits, and we went back for round number two. We tried it again, but we could not dislodge this swarm off the tree, no matter how hard we tried. I did film this with my camera and my phone, and at some point when I get a chance, I'll produce it and put it out there for posterity. I was joking with Bob that with the good has to come the bad, and maybe somebody will learn a lesson from this. And yes, I went out there this afternoon, and that hive is still up in the tree doing what it's doing. They've endured a couple rainstorms, and tonight thunderstorms are supposed to come in about 12:30. So we'll see how they fare. At one point, what we had is we got a good number of these bees into the bucket, and we lowered it down and we put it inside a hive, which I was going to transfer this swarm into. But they all flew back up into the tree. I had hoped that maybe they would consider this hive, having learned about it from us putting them in there. But all week long, there was no interest whatsoever in the hive. And I didn't want to leave it out in the yard, so I pulled it back and put it in the garage. My suspicion is they're in for the long haul. They're going to stay there until it gets cold. And maybe when it gets cold, I'll put something out. I don't know. I sure it is like so tantalizing to go out there and see this big swarm of your bees hanging in the tree every day and you can't get to them. Very frustrating. And there's no way to get a bucket truck in there or some big ladder. I mean, they're up in the top of an oak tree. It's not something we can get to. So you know what? I'm going to make lemon out of lemonade. I'm going to make lemonade out of lemons. I mean, I'm just going to watch. I'm fascinated as to what's going to happen here and how they're going to behave and what's going to happen when winter comes. I'm kind of curious. Will they fly off? Will they go try to find a home? Will they stay there and dwindle? I don't know. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with these guys and gals. So over at the farm, I have my polystyrene hive. It has two deeps and a medium. The medium is full. I put a second medium on top of it. Today, when I went over there and looked at it, they were building out some wax and working with that. So I think they're starting to store. And I actually put another medium on it. Now, we're here at July 19th, and the typical lament here in New Jersey is about July 15th, the nectar flow tapers off. And I think that's still pretty true. What I'm starting to hear from people is their hive weights are going down, and they're not as active, although I still see them bringing bright yellow pollen in at my local yard. But I want this hive to be a little more robust, and I want to make sure that they're going to have a good experience through the winter. So I put a feeder on them today, and I fed them 2 gallons of sugar solution. This is the swarm hive that we pulled out at the end of May, I think. Or beginning of May. I don't remember the actual date. But I want to make sure it has enough numbers so that when it gets to fall, it'll be in good shape. The other hive over there is the package hive that I started earlier in the year. I fed it to begin with. The nectar flow came. I didn't feed it because what I did feed, they weren't taking and it turned bad, so I poured it out. And now what I see when I went in there is they have 2 deep boxes and they still have not moved into that second box. For the life of me, I don't know why. They hatched all the bees out, but they're still a small little cluster. Now, I was in there last Saturday, and they had frames of carpets of bees. 2 or 3 frames full, both sides. And I'm hoping that they'll start to work. So I put a feeder on them. I'm using top feeders and gave them a couple gallons. The other hive over there is a nuke, and when I looked at it last week, the nuke was full through 4 frames, and they were tying up the 5th one, and if I didn't do anything with them, they were going to swarm, so I put a second nuke box over top of them, and today I gave them a feeder of sugar water, and I'm hoping that they'll start to build out that second box, and they'll be in a good way. So that's what's going on with the local hive report. I have to thank the bee man, Rob. I didn't mention this, but the other day I got a swarm call for somebody who had a swarm holding on a post off their deck. And I went to call them back, and another beekeeper from our club picked up the call and was going to go service them. The good news for him was he was 5 minutes away and I was 40 minutes away. I gave him a call and let him know I received the call. And I know one thing about him. He's not a person who typically keeps his bees. He has enough. But he does not want to see the bees die. And also, he specializes in doing cutouts and things like this. So he was gracious enough to go over, take the job, get the bees, and then I was able to bring them home, and I put them in my top bar hive. And I'm excited to say that I now have my top bar hive operational, and these bees look pretty good in there. They've settled in. They're covering all the comb that I gave them. I had 4 or 5 frames built out. In fact, I found another one today, which I want to put in there. And I wanted to feed them, so I gave them some sugar solution also. And I'm hoping that they'll ramp up and be able to fill that box in. I have to pat myself on the back on And a genius idea I had while cleaning up the garage. I was trying to figure out how to feed them, and I've been feeding them with Boardman feeders set inside on the bottom of the hive. It has, you know, it's okay, but it's not a great way to do it. I had also taken a large bowl and floated a bunch of peanuts in it. But the bowl can only be so large and sit on the bottom inside because of the fact of the taper of the top bar hive. It just is narrow on the bottom by design. So while cleaning up the garage, I came across one of those red pails that you use to scoop spackle in when you're doing sheetrock. It's 12-inch by 4-inch plastic device that you use when you're doing large spackle jobs. It's perfect. 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 Can I tell you it's perfect? It sets perfectly inside the hive. I was able to put sugar in it, and I was able to sprinkle some peanuts on there that the bees can land on and walk down and get a drink. So I'm really excited about that. Now, one of the things we noticed this week is they must be really thirsty. We have not seen a lot of bees at the pool, and I've not had luck with my watering bucket out by the hive. I put it out there, and something keeps drinking it, knocking it over. It's got to be, I know there's a groundhog out there, and my guess is, like I've said on previous episodes, I think it's a raccoon is washing its food in it. So I have to figure some way to hang a bucket out there that the bees can land to, but maybe something isn't going to crawl into with it sitting on the ground. But in the interim, I've seen a lot of bees in the pool this week. We keep scooping them out. So, yeah, long local hive report, but a lot of stuff going on. I got to mow the yards next week, and I'm going to continue to feed them and keep an eye on them. And we'll see what happens. But I think I have what I have. And I was contemplating making some splits out of the big hives. When I pull the honey off next weekend, I'll take a look to see if that's an option. It's a little bit late. I think I would have wanted to do that more in the beginning of July if I was going to do that. I certainly have plenty of equipment to do it, but my concern would be whether I can get them big enough with the time I have available. And yeah, it's just one of those things that requires attention to get them to a state where you're going to get them to overwinter, and it's a little bit late to get a start. So I don't know. We'll play that. I also need to do, it's July and August time frame, time to do your mite checks. So I got to do some mite checks in my big hives and see how they're doing and see if they need some intervention there. So, yeah, I think I'm rambling at this point. So local hive report done. Check. Thank you very much. For segment number one, I call this one Greetings from Malawi. I wanted to start this episode with a special feature, one that's been in the planning stages for a long time. I had a chance to plan an interview, and it speaks for itself, so I'm not going to introduce it any further. Please enjoy.
So we have a special guest on the program here, somebody that you're familiar with, but he's coming from a far-off place. Tim Schuler, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Kevin. Thanks for having me.
So Tim is the New Jersey state apiarist, for those who are listening that don't know. And Tim, you're not in New Jersey. Where are you?
I'm about halfway around the world from New Jersey. I'm in the country of Malawi in southeastern Africa. If you looked at Madagascar, it would be due west of Madagascar.
So you can forgive the phone quality here, folks, as Tim is calling in from Malawi. And Tim, this is your third trip out there, right?
Yeah, it's my third trip, working in the Zomba region in the Sakata project. And my main base of operation is Namangazi Farm.
So how did you get out there, Tim? Tell us about the inception of this program that has brought you back there three times.
Well, an organization from New Jersey called Villages in Partnership, and it can be easily found with a Google search. Their idea is to put villages in America in partnership with specific small number of villages in Malawi, Africa, so that we can learn from one another and we can help one another. You know, it's an eye-opening experience, Kevin, coming from a first-world country to a third-world country where, you know, people are subsistence farmers in the Sakata region. They live and they survive off of what they grow. And in America, it's a real romantic thing about eating what you grow. But in this place, it is a place where if the weather is not right, you don't grow enough and your whole family suffers because of it.
And so can you describe? Yeah, go ahead.
The program, I was brought into this program at my first visit because of my expertise with beekeeping, because they had a desire on the farm to develop a beekeeping program, and then we've also been transferring it into the villages. The nice thing about beekeeping is honey is in high demand in Malawi, and it is a way for a small farmer or a subsistence farmer to generate cash flow for their family.
So Tim, can you tell us a little bit about the surroundings there? What's the landscape like, and what's the beekeeping season like, and the type of beekeeping they know there as the norm?
Okay. Kevin, I'm at the foot of the Zomba Plateau. This Namangadi farm is at the base of the Zomba Plateau. At night, we're right in the winter season now. At night, we need a blanket and we usually need a sweatshirt because once the sun goes behind the plateau, it gets cool very quickly here. Yet, it's the middle of the afternoon and it's probably, I wouldn't say 80 degrees out, and if you were in the full sun with no shade, it gets very warm quickly here in this part of Africa. So it's interesting to see African people who dress partially in the middle of the day, but they have winter coats on in the evening and in the morning.
That's interesting. And it must be, how hot does it get during the day, when even in the summer months there?
In the summer months, it'll be up in the 90 to 100, and at the rainy season, which would be December, January, February, early March, it can be very humid then as well, Kevin.
So what type of beekeeping do they do there, Tim? What is it? What is a typical hobbyist equivalent to for beekeeping, or do they not have that notion?
They really don't have hobby beekeepers. They have a village will want to have a beekeeping project, and they will put together a committee of men and women who are interested in beekeeping. And the villages in partner with the Blantyre Synod will provide some beehives for them to get started, okay? And these are just empty Kenyan poplar hives. The Namangadi farm staff will train the people in the village who are interested in beekeeping in how best to get the African bee to just swarm and move into one of those hop bars. And then they train them on how to hang them, how to keep the ants out of them, you know, pretty much how to maintain them. And help them get started. And once they start harvesting some honey, they pay back the cost of those top bar hives, and then more are purchased in order to put into other villages that are interested. So it's a way that, it's like a pass-on program where once you've done well with it, then you pass on to another village that's interested in doing it.
And I would expect that, not only is it for the honey and agriculture, but you're also working with them on harvesting wax and trying to use all the products of the hive.
Correct. This afternoon, we're going to put out, we harvested some honey earlier this week. The wax is pretty dry now, and this afternoon, we're going to put it in, actually, a solar wax melter that I saw on your gadget page on the Northwest Jersey Beekeepers. And I sent a cooler over here several years ago. We purchased some local glass, and we have everything we need to purify and clean that capping wax so it's usable for other purposes.
That's great. And I know you said you were looking at putting some Langstroth pipes there just to see how that would work and show them. Did they succeed?
Now, we actually had two of them occupied, but one of them, it did not last. It looked to me like it became a drone layer. But we had one that is very strong, and we harvested seven medium Langstroth frames just the other day and spun them out in an old galvanized AI root extractor. And the guys were and gals were really thrilled with running that extracting machine. So I'm going to try this afternoon also to show Kristen and Elizabeth how to possibly split that hive in order to get two of the Langstroths occupied at this point. I was very impressed because they took a hive that was very strong, and I told them about splitting hives, and they tried to do it, and it was very successful. Both of them became queen right, both of them grew, and got really strong.
Well, that's really neat. It's neat to see them pick up and be able to spread the wealth, so to speak, to other areas. How many people are involved in the program where you are?
On the farm, there are three main people involved with the beekeeping program. But out in the villages, there's seven or eight villages that have beekeeping committees that are doing pretty well right now. We just harvested at Namangadi Farm out of six hives. We harvested, almost 250-gram bottles. I have trouble, Kevin, going back and forth from American measurement to metric measurement. It's not something I can do in my mind. So I converted everything to metric, and we have enough honey for 250-gram bottles.
Wow. So, Tim, I know you have activities planned today, and you have to get to them. I guess I'll just ask you a couple quick questions, and you can say as much or little as you want, but what have you done while you're there this year, and what do you have planned for the rest of your trip before you come back?
Well, I'm heading back tomorrow, which is Saturday. My flight leaves out of Blantyre around 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And today, we have some top bar hives that were not properly made in the very beginning by the local carpenter. They had no rail to support the top bar. So what happens is the top bar shifts and slide down to the side of the box. And it makes it for very difficulty working the bees. So our plan is to transfer them out of those defective boxes into the good boxes this afternoon. And then we will, the guys and gals will end up with properly repairing those ones that are defective and then rehanging them. They should be highly attractive to new swarms because they have propolis and wax, and they'll have some old, you know, remnants of comb and stuff in them, which will be very attractive to new bees. We also did a little open feeding project because right now we're in the winter months, and there's some things blooming, but I've not seen any bees on. So today we crushed a bunch of sugar cane, and the bees found it immediately and started taking the juice out of it. I showed them about mixing up sugar syrup and just open feeding to try to supplement the bees, because the last thing we want is for an occupied hive to abscond or to starve.
What type of bees do they have there, Tim?
They are the African bee. They are much smaller. They're noticeably smaller than our honeybee that we work with, and you can clearly see that. You know, when you work with them, when you look at their cell size, it's noticeably smaller than the European bee cell size.
And isn't the African bee prone to swarm more or move around to try and find forage?
Yeah, if there's too much disturbance, they'll move. If all of a sudden there's no food, they'll even leave brood. I've seen some hives where they had absconded off of the brood, to look for another place where there was food. What I've been encouraging all the beekeepers I work with here is not to take too much honey. You always got to leave some to take the bees through the dirt. But let's face it, when you're looking at a cash cow,
just like
with a lot of new beekeepers in America, the temptation is to take more because you're thrilled about it, and then you shoot yourself in the foot and get discouraged in the future. So we do not want that to happen.
So while you're a state employee, you work for New Jersey State, you're over there on your own accord, Tim, and you're there with a group of folks in an exchange. How do people follow you? How do people support you in your efforts? I'm assuming you'll go back again next year if the opportunity presents.
Yeah. Anybody that would be interested in supporting a project like this could just go to the Villages in Partnership website, and there's a way to, you can read about it. I would encourage they read about it, because beekeeping is not just one of the, that's just one of the things Villages in Partnership does. I think so far they've placed over 25 boreholes, which are water wells, in villages where women would have to walk, you know, 2 or 3 miles to get water for their family, clean water. And that just frees up so much time in a person's day that it's not even funny. We also do some investment in infrastructure. They build a maize mill, which is a mill that turns corn into flour for the women to make their staple food, when normally it would take them 2 or 3 hours a day to feed it out with a mortar and pestle in order to make enough to get everybody fed in their family. So Villages in Partnership works in all those areas. And if someone is so moved to help support some of this effort, they could certainly online make a contribution or mail a check-in. And in the note, they could just put, you know, Schuler Beekeeping. And that way the people involved would know that they wanted to go to a beekeeping project.
Yeah, that's great, Tim. And we'll make sure we put a link to that in the show notes for it. So
cool.
We have the opportunity. I guess I'll ask you one last, anything you want to tell me that we didn't get to chat about?
Yeah, there's been so much happened in this week. I mean, coming for 1 week is really too short. My hope in the future is to be able to come and stay here for 2 to 4 weeks at a time and really be able to get the feel for the whole beekeeping cycle. I have 2 beekeepers here at Namangaji that hopefully they are going to be taking good notes this year and help me better understand the cycle. But you can see that if you come for just a week at a time, you get a brief snapshot. You really don't get a full picture until you've kind of lived through some of it. Every time I came was a different time of the year so that I could try to see what the beekeeping cycle was like in this country.
And I'm assuming they don't have some sort of state apiarist equivalent over there, so I can only imagine how valuable your time and guidance is.
Yeah, I mean, they're thirsty for knowledge. They want knowledge, and they know that beekeeping is a good profession, and it can be very profitable. The last time I was here, we visited a man who was running about 110 topwater hives in the southern part of Malawi. I took a whole group of maybe 20 or 30 villagers down there to see his operation. He employs 2 full-time men, and he sells honey, he sells beehive boxes, and he sells wax. And he's by Malawian standards, he's doing very well for himself. I even saw a TV on the roof of his brick house. So, those are all good. The prosperity has come to his town, or has come to his life.
Oh, that's awesome. That's great. So Tim, it's I talked a long time about putting this together, having you call in from the field, so to speak, and I'm so glad that we got to pull it off. And I, for all the beekeepers, we're so appreciative of your effort for there. And your dedication to this, and we really do appreciate taking the time to contact us and let us know what's going on.
Would you like to meet my beekeeping friend?
I would love to.
Okay.
Sure.
I'm going to bring the guys over. Frank, Kristen, Elizabeth. This is my friend Kevin from America. Okay, would you introduce yourself, Frank, and then introduce the rest of the gang? You can just speak out loud.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my name is Frank. I am responsible for teaching beekeeping to farmers in the Sakata Project. I'm Kristen Lung. I'm a beekeeper in Namina's farm.
I'm Elizabeth Ndozi. I'm also doing beekeeping in government.
So it's a pleasure to meet you. How is the days when you have Tim available to you? Is it an adventure as Tim shows you things? It must be interesting to learn new and different ways of working with the bees.
Yeah, definitely. It's a very good adventure. I think Tim brought a lot of tips for us, some of which did not know. Especially maybe when we're doing the processing of the bee, the honey rather. I think we are burning in fire and doing all sort of, maybe contaminating it in the process. But Tim has done a good work. He has taught us how to process without putting the combs on fire. And again, even to attract the bees in some of the pipes which were not occupied, he has also assisted us on that one. Maybe my friends can also add.
I think Tim has helped us a lot, especially on the equipment we can use when processing the honey itself. We didn't have much equipment for processing the honey, but as of now, how he has taught us how to process the honey, we'll do it as he has told us. And we did it yesterday. It is really good for the processing which we have been doing yesterday. And as of now, we are waiting to cut the honey which we have processed yesterday. And today, we are waiting to cut that honey in the bottles.
We thank him for everything. He is in our hands. And he told us to do more things on this so that we can benefit from this. We thank all the people from the country for which Tim comes from. They support us and help us in everything. Thank you.
You're welcome. You know, in New Jersey, it's July, and it is time for us to harvest our honey, and there's no better time of the season for a beekeeper to harvest. So we share in your excitement of being able to harvest your honey and find new ways to do that. In fact, we have a meeting tomorrow for our local beekeeping association to discuss how to harvest honey in some of the manners that Tim has shown you. So even our new beekeepers are going to get the same experience this week for us. So
Kevin, I have another gentleman I would like to introduce you to. He is the director of the Namangaji Farm, and his name is Mr. Preston McCooley.
Hello, friend.
Hello.
Definitely. Well, much has been covered by the two guys and then the three friends who are just interacting with you. I should be thankful to Mr. Tim for whatever he has done, and also not forgetting you friends here in New Jersey, America. All right?
Yes, beekeeping and partnerships are universal, and we do enjoy hearing what you're doing and appreciate the work you're doing.
We also appreciate you for your assistance. Not much has been covered by my friends, but well, I should be thankful to Mr. Tim for having come and whatever he has provided us.
We feel the same way about Tim. He's a valuable asset for us as beekeepers. He works across our region, so you're in good hands with Tim helping you out over there.
In fact, he's not only concerning the farm, but goes down the field and meets other farmers who are also being assisted by Mr. Tim.
And Tim, have you're very welcome. Tim, have you been able to help in other ways other than beekeeping, just general observations? Or?
Oh, yeah. I work with livestock farmers as well because a lot of my background is in livestock. And Dr. Manuel Amasia came with me as well. He's a veterinary doctor. And the two of us have been working with some of the livestock issues on the farm, on this Namangadi farm as well.
Well, I can't thank you all enough for taking the time to talk to us. We really appreciate it. And it's been interesting learning about what you're doing. And Tim, I'm also opening the invitation that when you come back, let's talk a little more in detail where, maybe you could sit down with us in studio and have a conversation about some of the other things that you've done there in more detail.
That sounds good, Kevin. Mr. Matulu wants to make one more comment.
Please.
I wish you if you had come here so that we can also see you in person. Because talking to the phone, well, of course we are interacting, but if you can have time to come here to Malawi, that will sound better.
I miss that, Tim. I'm not sure if he's far away from the phone.
Yeah, Mr. Matulu is inviting you to come to Malawi. He said it would be much better if you came and he saw you face to face rather than talk on the phone.
Oh, I'm all for that, Tim. When you go back next year, I'll buy a plane ticket and come with you and bring my recording equipment and gear. I'd love to come there. Well, I'd very much enjoy it, and thank you for that invitation.
Thank you very much. That would be fine. Okay, Kev, we got to start off because the sun's starting to go down. It's getting a little cooler, and we got to get our honey packed. We've got to do a little bee work, okay?
Okay, you enjoy your day and have a safe flight back, and I'll catch up with you when you get back. And again, thank you, everybody, for taking the time to talk to us today.
All right. Vikomo, Kevin.
Bye-bye.
It was so exciting to get the chance to do this interview on our show. And I've had it in the back of my mind for a number of years now, since Tim has been going out there for a while, to set it up logistically. Tim and I have grandiose plans to get content on the show, but schedules that are just not terribly conducive to getting connected all the time. We were both, however, committed this year to making sure that this time we were able to connect, and I'm really pleased that we were able to record something for the podcast. I know some of it was a little hard to understand. My guess is that the conversations toward the end were done by speakerphone on Tim's cell phone to make it more convenient for them to participate. I guess I'm going to have to take up Mr. Makulu on his invitation next time so that I can help out in Tim's endeavor and possibly capture things in the field firsthand. It would be an honor to have the ability to contribute to it. I really hope that as a listener you thought that was interesting, and please take a moment to visit our show notes and the link to the Villages in Partnership that Tim mentioned. You have our permission to go there now. It's villagesinpartnership.org. Segment number two, we call this one competitive beelining. Recently, we had the pleasure of meeting businessman Jim Fisher in person at our meeting the association hosted it for the NJBA in the spring. I didn't find any time to chat with him about his products. Just a cursory introduction and a thank you for participating in our meeting. Jim's located in New York City and sells a number of bee-related products, including Fisher's Bee Quick, something that you might use these July days for extracting honey with a fume board. It so happens it's not his product line that I wish to talk about, but another interesting idea that I came across on his website, and lo and behold, it was Jim's group that came up with the concept. See the tie-in there, how I did that? Yeah. If you go to bee-quick.com/500, and that's the number, so it's http http://b-quick.com/500, you'll see a webpage dedicated to a competitive beelining concept. A few episodes back, I did a segment on beelining and came across this site while I was doing some research on it. I put a bookmark on it, and this week I had a few minutes to circle back and peruse what it was about. What I discovered looks like a damn cool idea. They set up a friendly competition, or game if you like that notation better, to put teams of players in an undisclosed location, and they work to find a hidden hive by beelining. How cool does this sound? The website was dedicated to a contest that was hosted in 2004, and I don't know if it ever took off past the concept stage, but it's a really cool idea, and creativity abounds about how the event was set up. It's simple and ingenious all at the same time. So the concept is akin to golfing for bees. Of course, a course is established by the host, and players are given an envelope just shortly before teeing off that tells them of the location, meaning the location where they start to beeline. They report to the tee, and they have a predefined time to find the hive on the course. The course is designed with areas that you can go in and roughs, using a golf term, that you cannot cross. So think about any typical golf course. You would have lakes, boundaries, woods, things like that. You would stay on the greens. So there's a number of rules that's set up to how you would conduct your beelining contest here. The second rule is that there's only one hive. If you find a nearby hive, but not the designated one, good for you, but that doesn't count. Perhaps that could be the equivalent to the tin cup hit over the water feature. You'll be remembered, but you didn't win the tournament. Kevin moment. That's a reference to the Kevin Costner golf movie, Tin Cup, in case you were lost on that cultural reference. End of Kevin moment. The third rule for the game is that you have to use beelining techniques. Advancement is by following bees, not wandering aimlessly. This isn't geocaching. GPS on the phone and other aids are not viable for use. It is you and your beelining box with a notebook. Rule number four is players have a half hour to find the hive and to do the best they can. Rule number five is the winner is decided upon the least search time and least stops. Things such as the number of stops on the way to find the hive, the furthest that you wander from the actual hive direction, and such factors for tiebreakers. This way, if two people find the hive, for example, then you have something to decide who was more direct and declare a winner. Or if they didn't define it, who was the actual closest person to getting there. Rule number six, use whatever equipment you want. If you want to share equipment with another team or get directions on how to beeline from your sponsor, sure. No cell phone cheating, though. So the point of that is if you show up at your tee and you don't own a beelining box, you could just borrow somebody else's. Rule number seven, keep creativity out of it. So, for example, players can't attach something to a bee to determine which direction it flew off. In fact, one of the principles of the contest is that no bee should be harmed in the act of executing the game. Rule number eight, players don't show up at a tee, they forfeit their slot. They could, I suppose, be creatively added later, but it's important to keep things on schedule. I think the premise of this is that one team is operating at a time. I think that makes sense because you don't want to encounter another team and then follow them and do whatever. I'm off on a tangent. Rule number nine, this one's simple. The course location is secret. So after you're done, don't tell anyone where you've been at the bar. There'll be time to tell war stories later. Rule number 10, feel free to learn your craft. Set up some alternate location and set your own tee, and doing practice is not a problem, as practice makes perfect. The job here is to be good at beelining, after all. And the last rule is just to have fun. It's really just a game. I have to say, in my years of experience in scouts, you wouldn't think there'd be that, soccer, baseball. The terrible thing about some Americans is everything becomes a freaking win at all contests. Nope, leave it at home is what I say. No room for that here. No whining, no bickering, no quibbling, just straight up enjoyment of nature is required to play this game. So that's a bit of ad-libbing by me. These rules I speak of are on the webpage. You can go check them out. It's the one I mentioned at the opening. It's clear by the voice that the website was written in that it's a little tongue-in-cheek and meant to be fun. And I have to say, it really was a fun and creative idea. They went as far as making up a logo and calling it the National Collegium of Apiary Athletics, NCAA, contest. Some of my listeners probably participated in this back in the day, as it appears that it was associated with the Eastern Apiculture Society. I may have to speak to my friends at EAS, since New Jersey is hosting next year, about rekindling this event. It sure sounds like it was fun. Yep, we're also going to have to give Jim Fisher a call. Talk to him about his products and ask him about this and the backstory. I have to say, don't just finish on my account. Go check out the website. The game is fun, but if you look around the site, you'll find some other things. Make sure you check out the satire and the history of the professional beelining organization. It's really funny. It's worth the read. There's also something on Jim's site I noticed while clicking around about the wall of shame or something like that. So it talks about well-known products like McDonald's and others that use honey in their products and whether they have fame or shame when you look at the list of ingredients and whether they really used honey. So anyway, back to this notion on competitive beelining. Cool idea and worth a look. And heck, for a bee club, it might just be a good idea for a meeting. Have a little bit of fun with it. Simply provide a beelining box to a group of people in a hive and you get to go at it. I know the perfect location in our township. I know a beekeeper who has a hive sitting out in the back of a field in the middle of the woods where there's a number of fields surrounding you. You could easily build a course around that. Yeah, I'm going to have to think about this some more. www.bee-quick.com/500. And that's the number 500. Check it out. You'll also find a link at our show notes. For segment number 3, we get a little bit serious. This one is titled, No Nosema in Larvae, Not So Fast. We know that Nosema sarani causes widespread disease in the midgut of the honeybee adult, and it is thought to only infect the adult, but they have recently discovered that it can impact larvae at a critical life stage. In a recent study, they reared honeybee, the Apis mellifera larvae, in vitro, and provided the first demonstration that Nosema sarani can infect larvae and decrease subsequent adult longevity. In the study, they exposed 3-day-old larvae to various doses of spore counts in larval food and found that spores developed intracellularly in the midgut cells at the prepupal stage, which is 8 days after egg hatch, in 41% of the bees exposed as larvae. They did this in various batches and exposed different groups to different concentrations of 40,000 spores, 10,000 spores, and of course no spores as a control. prepupae exposed to the 10K and 40K spore treatments as larvae had significantly elevated spore counts as compared to controls. In addition, adults exposed as larvae had significantly elevated spore counts as compared to controls. One interesting thing, and unexpectedly, the low-dose 10K led to significantly greater infection, 1.3-fold more spores and 1.5-fold more infected bees than the higher dose, the 40K ones, upon adult death. Researchers speculated that differential immune activity may have been involved in the higher dose that triggered a stronger larval immune response and resulted in fewer adult spores, but imposed a cost reducing lifespan. So let me say that a different way. The immune response as to whether you got 10K worth of dose or 40K worth of dose was different. And apparently one dose triggered a stronger larval immune response, which was the 10K one. So net-net, Apis mellifera larvae can be infected with Nosema serrani, and it can result in a reduced adult longevity, something that apparently many did not think was existent. I think this is really important. I know Randy Oliver was hot on this for a period of time, trying to check out the whole Nosema thing. And as I listened to different researchers, most recently Dave Tarpey and a couple others, this whole Nosema thing is something that is apparently difficult to follow. And quite simply, you as a beekeeper looking at a box of bees, unless it's a ridiculously extreme case or you're breaking out a microscope, you're generally unaware of the condition in your hive. So the fact that this is now involving larvae, based on research, is interesting. This is not the... let me take a moment and tell you where the source of this is. If you're interested in learning more about the study, visit the Plus One, PLOSONE, journal website and search for Nosema serrani can infect honeybee larvae and reduces subsequent adult longevity. The name of the author is Darren Eirie, E-I-R-I, is the name of the person first credited. There are other authors credited on the paper too, of course, as there usually is. The published date of the research article was May 27th of this year, 2015, and you can check out a link on our show notes if you want to read the full paper, and you can see how they tested their methods and their outcomes and see additional conclusions. It's really worth a look, and I'm always fascinated when they talk about the different aspects of what's taken down the bee. The mites and the viruses, the neonicotinoids, Nosema serrani is always in that mix as one of the top five. So this is an interesting finding, and I wonder if it will lead to additional research on this particular topic. I guess we'll have to see. So this brings to close the prepared segments for the episode. We'll go to the back of the book. Let's ring into roundtables. First one up is called Summer Meeting. Yesterday, Saturday, July 18th, we had a meeting at a member's house, David Leary, for the NWNJBA. It was summer management as a main topic. It was pretty interesting, pretty good crowd. We talked about a bunch of different topics, just trying to make sure people are zen with what goes on this time of year. If you're a new beekeeper, talking about making sure you're doing the right things for your bee, feeding them, keeping them going. The ever-present reminder to get water out to your bees, especially this time of year. We get to July, August, where the creeks start to dry up. Plants are a little drier, and the bees need water to process a bunch of different things in their hive to keep the hive cool and other things. So really important to make sure we remember to provide water sources for our bees. This, too, is the time when we get into the dearth, at least in our region, and we want to make sure we keep an eye on robbing and deal with anything that's going on. Recognizing and managing robbing is really important, lest all your hives be overtaken. 'Tis the season for honey harvesting. Our club recently invested in an automatic spinning, I think it's a radial, if I have the terminology correct, extractor. And we had that on display yesterday talking about how people get access to it. If you're a member of an association, many of them do offer extractors for you. And this is the time in July and August, at least in the northern part of the United States where a lot of people extract their honey. For us, we have two extractors available for our association, one manual, one automatic one where you flip a switch and the engine spins it. And really happy to have that now as an opportunity for our members. When you're dealing with removing honey, remove your honey that's 7/8 capped. In other words, don't remove the stuff that's not capped. It'll ferment. That's one little tip. It's also one of those times where if you're a treatment beekeeper and you're going to put something on, make sure the product you're using does not go on when you have honey for consumption of your humans. That's the best way to put it. Don't put your treatments on. Mitaway Quick Strips, which is formic acid, which is in honey, is generally perceived to be okay, but the rest of them, make sure you read the labels. Talked about processing. We'll go into that. This is a time of year where you want to take a look at the performance of your queens. Make sure that they're doing what they're supposed to be. You're looking for sufficient quantities of bees. During the spring here, you're looking for good brood patterns. Mind you, if you get into the dirt, the queen starts shutting down, that doesn't mean you have a bad queen. But how has she done so far this year? How many years old is she? And if it's time to replace her, this is the time going into fall so she could settle in for spring and come out with a bang, and or settle in for fall and come out with a bang in spring. So keep an eye on your queens. Of course, you want to do your mite checks July and August. The preference, I think, in the industry is alcohol washed. We have videos on how to do that, and instructions are available on the web. You could use a sticky board. You could use sugar shake. You could do things like cauldrons. You could just treat because you feel like treating. I know people cringe at that statement. I'll let that one be. Yesterday somebody said, I'm just going to treat because I'm not sure. I don't like that answer. I want you, if you're going to treat, to monitor your mites, and if it deserves treating, treat. And if you could afford the losses, maybe you consider leaving them be. Maybe. If you have a bunch of hives and you could cull some of them and not do that, but don't infest your neighbors. So, listen, be a good neighbor for that type of thing. We did talk about treatment options, Mitaway Quick Strips. We talked about Apigard. We talked about the one that everybody loves right now, which is Apivar, which is also Amitraz, and how to do those. One of the things that I mentioned as the president of the Beekeepers Association is I don't mind talking about how to do it and tips and tricks, but I tell you, read the instruction. You know, every time you use these products, make sure you read your instructions. Anyway, summer management, it's here. Typically not a lot to do from a summer standpoint. You definitely want to make sure your bees are in good shape. Hopefully they have some excess honey from spring. They can get them through to the fall nectar flow. I speak of these things because that's what we know here in New Jersey. Some of you in Florida, for example, that have nectar flow all year long, or those of you in the north who are getting a small amount of nectar flow, whatever your case may be, you'll have to judge accordingly because beekeeping is local. But for summer management, it's something like what I just told you for us here in New Jersey. And if you're one of us New Jerseyans, do keep your minds on your bees here and make sure you get them through. They've served you well in the spring. Roundtable number two. This one is listener mail. First one starts off, I only have two of them. Michael Carr. There's times when I see an email come in on my phone and glimpse at it while I'm at a meeting at work or checking on things for lunch. I'm busy and I don't have time to respond, but I've seen the email and don't take action on it. Maybe you can relate to this, what I'm talking about. That's one peril of having a phone with message pop-up and notifications is you see stuff and you remember it and you think about replying to it, but you don't. And then I sat there tonight and debated whether I did or didn't respond to that. The other thing is sometimes I respond to them from my phone, my cell phone, and then I look at my regular mail and go, I need to write that guy back or write that gal back. And it's funny, I've already done it. So if you ever get a double message from me, that's probably what's going on. So Mike wrote us to thank us for the effort of the podcast and share that he has seen bees wandering around on the ground and hypothesize a few answers to this phenomena. Hold on, Kevin, moment. I listen to myself as I'm talking through these podcasts, and I hear myself slaughter words here and there. Sometimes I wonder if it's like pre-stroke condition. I think, you know, I should go back and fix those. And when I listen to the episodes afterwards, I go, wow, groan, cringe. But other times I go, you all know what I mean. You've been with me long enough. It's just me. I know last episode I said something wrong like 8 times. And I kept saying to myself, no, you said that wrong. As I was listening to it. But I don't have the time or energy to go back and fix them. A lot of times I fix these words and things that I pronounce wrong, especially if they construe the meaning, and sometimes I just flat out miss it. And mind you, what time is it? It's 10:53 on a Sunday night as I'm recording. I'm tired. It's been a long week. It's been a long weekend. I told you I was worn out. But here I am, working away. So love me for that. End of Kevin moment. If you hear bad words, you like not pronounce well or whatever, just go with the flow for me. All right, where was I? So I just answered his email tonight, but conjured up some ideas on the spot and never had a chance to sit and answer the message. So I'll kind of tell you what I said to him and what I guessed was going on. So remember, his condition is he has bees wandering around on the ground around his hives. This is what he wrote in. For the last few weeks, I've observed a lot of bees walking around on the ground and plants around the hive. On any given day, I'll see 10 to 20 bees doing this. And although I'm sure there is much more because I'm only counting the ones I see, there are typically more of them doing this in the afternoon as compared to the morning. They don't seem to be doing anything in particular, just sort of wandering around. Upon close inspection, their wings seem to be intact, so I don't think it's deformed wing syndrome. So he shared with me 5 ideas. First one is, maybe it's old bees going off to die. The second one is they got some insecticide-laden nectar somewhere and they're slowly dying upon returning to the hive. Third one is some bees brought back insecticide-laden nectar and shared it with the hive and now many more are dying. Fourth one, varroa mites causing some secondary infection causing the bees to feel ill and leave the hive. 5 is bees just wandering around for some natural or non-nefarious reason. And the last one is tracheal mites. But he puts in parentheses, supposedly tracheal mites are quite rare in Ohio these days, so I doubt it is this. All interesting ideas and all plausible, I suppose. The funny thing is I have no idea which one is actually right. But I have one thought locked in my head, and this is what I wrote back to him. I remember seeing lots of bees on the ground on my hives too. And I remember reading in a book, The Art and Adventure of Beekeeping by Ormond and Harry Abey, that these are foragers returning with a heavy load and just plain miss the landing. They're flying from afar, coming into the hive, and it's suggested that they didn't have enough landing, or tried to land, but they were laden heavy with honey, and they missed it and fell to the ground. And they're down there recovering for the flight up into the hive. So in the book, it said the authors hung a cloth, pinned it to the entrance, and let it hang down. And the bees that missed were able to actually cling onto the cloth and use their claws to walk back up and into the hive. They noticed this phenomena, and it was so such an epiphany for them that they decided in the future to change their bottom board landing arrangements so that there was more of a landing area for the bees to actually come in on. They had these extenders, if I remember correctly, that they pulled out so that the landing area for the bees, the front porch, so to speak, was out wide, and the bees couldn't, when coming in heavy, didn't miss it at all. That's a pretty cool idea. Maybe that's what's going on, especially the clue is what you said later in the afternoon. This is when the bees are coming back. They're laden with honey, and maybe they're missing it. So I don't think I jumped to the conclusion of nefarious reasons for what's going on, pesticide laden, all that stuff. You never know, though. One notion is sometimes they just exit the hive because it's crowded, and they mill around the ground on the front of the hive. I've literally observed that from my hives and find them milling around underneath my hive stands. I've sat and watched them, and eventually they just fly up and go back inside. They might be taking a break. Of course, bees do have a lifespan and don't want to die in the hive. So maybe they're taking their tired and feeble bodies outside. And you have to keep in mind that in an active season with tens of thousands of bees in the hive, many hundreds die a day. Most of them happen outside of your sight, but I guess it's not out of the realm of possibility that you're watching some go off to Neverland. If any listeners have any ideas, other than what's been shared here, about what's happening, please feel free to write in, and we could do a follow-up segment in a future roundtable. So many thanks, Mike, for writing in on this one. One more listener comment. It's not a listener mail. It's something that came in through a quick Facebook message. I was sitting in last weekend when I got a message from Kenny McReynolds. He said he was stuck at the Newark airport, missed his connection to Houston, and the funny thing is that he sat next to a guy who works for Bayer on the way to Barcelona. His commentary was, he said, not to blame him for the missing bees. I guess Ken's listening through to our episodes is up to number 68 at the time that he wrote in. I sent a quick note back to him, and he replied back in the morning indicating that the guy apparently works for the agricultural group but seems to be more in sales and not the science side, and he was disclosing about the 60-minute broadcast. I guess the takeaway message here is, I don't know what you think of these big companies, but there's people behind the scenes. Be kind, folks, be kind. To the Bayer guy, I don't blame you. You're probably a really nice guy who works very hard and probably doesn't get paid enough for your frustration. How do I know? But anyway, that's all I had for listener mail this episode. Roundtable number 3, this one's called Resistance to Bee Stings. I saw a Facebook post. I see a lot of Facebook posts from beekeepers, but one of them was interesting. It had a picture of somebody with a bee sting to their inner forearm, and they had a red mark about the size of a golf ball or something, and it said, "This is a normal reaction to a bee sting." The article went on to say, in rare cases, a severe reaction leading to anaphylaxis can be fatal. There are, on average, and I'm quoting it, 4 to 5 deaths each year associated with bee stings. This compares with an average 3 deaths associated with lightning strikes in the UK. So I guess they're talking about UK in general. And to put it in perspective, there are approximately 2,500 fatal car accidents. So I know the average rate, because I heard this on a podcast today, as a matter of fact, that in the United States, 30, 35,000 people a year lose their life to car accidents. It's the number one cause of death in the United States annually. So they must be talking about the UK. So anyway, the article in Facebook was about a new campaign at the URL http://beresistant.com. And its aim is to raise awareness of venom anaphylaxis, which is caused by allergic reaction to bee and wasp stings, and treatment options available, including venom immunotherapy. I have to pronounce this all really well because I'm tired, so forgive me. IBRA is the name of the group, and they publish a booklet, Insect Bites and Stings, and I guess it's by the late Harry Riches, who was a pioneer of bee venom immunotherapy and acknowledged authority. So beresistant.com is the website. If you're in the UK or overseas, across the pond, as we say, there's a resource for you. And I think of it this way, too. Somebody was discussing this the other day. I'm allergic to bees. I said, well, when were you stung? When I was 6 years old. Well, did you have a reaction? Yeah, my hands swell up. Well, why do you think you're allergic to bees? Because my hands swell up. I said to the person, yeah, everybody's hand swells up when you get stung with bee. Did you have a reaction that was distal or away from the area of the sting? I was 6 years old. I said, well, do you carry an EpiPen? Yes. Well, maybe you're a little misguided in this. I'm not telling you not to carry the EpiPen. God forbid you get stung and you actually have an anaphylactic reaction. But the fact of the matter is, I'm guessing you spend a lot of money on your EpiPen when you don't really need it. You might want to go check that out in some manner, but that's your call. I love these people who tell me they're allergic to bees because they got bit once and they swelled up. Of course, that's a natural human reaction to it. All right, put it away, Kevin. Put it away. So seeing how I'm an hour and 20 minutes into it, and I don't have anything else prepared, I guess it's time to close this thing down. For closing comments, I wanted to say I'm planning a family vacation to Seattle at the end of July. Yeah, vacation. Yeah, boom shakalaka. Man, I need a vacation. Kevin moment. Sure, it's a funny thing to say in a public forum, and the logical person would cringe at the notion of putting this declarative statement out there with an immediate reaction of, you're exposing yourself to bad people. Why not just go post it on Facebook? I will assure everybody, and please listen carefully, that we have a house sitter in residence while we're gone. So please, bad people, cancel the plans to come and rob us while we're away. In fact, Sharon's friend, who's watching the house, has a large dog that will be resident. And if you want to take your luck with him, good luck with that, because I don't particularly trust of him. He's a brute. He's nothing but solid muscle. And he stayed with us for a week, and he's friendly enough. But let me tell you, you don't want to cross his path. If you're an unwelcome guest and you encounter him, good luck with that. Just saying. So Seattle, yeah. Going out to pick up Danny. He's out there working, finishing up his co-op. Come back home for the summer before he heads back to Rochester to school. I was wondering if any of our listeners out there could recommend a bee-related activity while we're out there on the West Coast. We're planning our itinerary. And I said to Sharon, if possible, it would be neat to go see how they do things out there. So the end of July is when we're going. If you have any ideas, we'd love to hear it. Maybe you're having an association meeting out there that we can go guest at. Looking for something for a few short hours, maybe a visit to a commercial place or somebody's operation. You know, a simple afternoon jaunt, something like that, to see how it's done. If you have any ideas, drop me off an email, kevin@bkcorner.org. So next week starts the Warren County Fair. Going to take in the day and the fair and do some public outreach before we head out to the West Coast. Looking forward to that. We had a meeting, as I said, yesterday. Did the final planning for that. If you're a Northwester and you didn't sign up, please go help us out there and get your tickets. Really looking forward to going to the fair. Always enjoy going over there and meeting people and working the bee booth. And it's always a lot of fun to hear what the public has to think about all that. So I'm happy to say, and you heard from the Tim Schuler interview, and even though it's still not the best quality, it's better than a sharp stick in your eye. I figured out, finally, this week, how to record from phone. Actually, the solution is simple but ingenious. You call my cell phone, and then I do a three-way call to my home phone, and my computer can record the output from my home phone. The problem with recording typically is that I am extremely loud when I'm on my home phone, and whoever I'm talking to sounds like they're talking in another room. There was a bit of that in this recording where I had to dull myself down and amp up the other person, but it wasn't as bad as last time. So I think I now have the means to do a phone interview properly. So on that note, and I'll leave you with this. I did a little test by having Sharon call me from her cell phone and then recording something, and I asked her. It's a cute little thing. Don't yell at Sharon. She was just having fun. Enjoy. Okay, time to leave you. I'll leave you with this little recording at the end here, but first, like our beloved bees, when beekeepers go together, we accomplish great things. Thanks for listening, everybody, and be well. See you next time on the Beekeeper's Corner podcast.
Say, Mary had a little lamb.
Mary had a little lamb, a little lamb, a little lamb. Mary had a little lamb, fleece was white as snow.
Nice. That was beautiful. I think I'll open the show with that next week.
Great.